Kevin Ross was a star basketball player at Creighton University. An injury made it impossible for him to play, and it brought to light that as a student, he could barely read or write. Well, at 24, he enrolled at Westside Prep in Chicago, got his basics up to speed, and graduated last year. Our guests tonight are Kevin Ross, now a student at Roosevelt University, and you should know the well-known educator, Marva Collins, founder of Westside Prep and its guiding light. Good to have you both here tonight.
Thank you, Dennis. Pleasure to be here.
Do you remember testing Kevin? I mean, having him sit down and going over some material to kind of make a judgment in your own mind?
Yes, very vividly. I think that's something I'll never forget, and we were all appalled that Kevin tested at a second grade level. In fact, to make it authentic for us, we knew where he was. We had him tested at an outside source. So that the score would not, I didn't want someone to feel, well, she's only saying this, he's really not this terrible. I needed a support system. So we had Kevin tested at an outside source, and we were just appalled that here, someone who had done 16 years in traditional system, 12 years of high of school and 4 years of college, and tested at a second grade level.
Now you used the word appalled. Were you surprised? Were you depressed? Were you angry?
I was all of those things, Dennis. I said a few words that we cannot say here on camera. I was depressed or to the point of tears sometimes. I have been saying the same thing over and over again because I realize that Kevin is one person who stepped forward. I wept not only for Kevin, but for the millions, the 23 million other illiterates that we have in our society today, the 35 million functional illiterates that we have, and the 2 million illiterates being added to that already deplorable figure each year. And I think it was with a sense of frustration. What can I do this side of leaping from the Sears Tower to get people to understand what we're doing to America, which has shared a certain amount of preeminence? And we're gradually losing that, and we're losing it because of our poor educational systems.
Had you seen other examples of young people in the past, especially young men who were fine athletes who you thought had been exploited by colleges and universities?
Well,
or was this a graphic thing?
I think statistics bear me out when they say that almost one half black students who go into athletics, only one half of them graduate. Somehow when they're injured, no longer useful to the university, they become, something happens that they just never graduate, they get rid of them, or they are pushed out, and I think Kevin just maybe refused to be pushed out. There's a congressional testimony that was done last week where Kevin testified before Congress about athletes, and I think they're realizing that there is a problem. I just hope that out of this bill, we will no longer recruit children from the inner city hoping that they will become an asset to society to end right back up again in their fetid neighborhoods a liability.
Let me get Kevin involved in the conversation. Kevin, last year when you gave a magnificent speech on your graduation from Westside, you said that Marva Collins had given you a new lease on life. What's your life like today because of that experience?
Oh, it's a whole different dominion in my life because not only is the I can understand the printed word, I know how to syllabicate, and I know synonyms. I have word attack skills, which when I first enrolled at Westside Prep, Ms. Collins gave me this book about 800 pages, and I never read in my life. You know, that scared the heck out of me, but she gave me confidence in myself, and I read the whole book. It was 5 smooth stones, and I really enjoyed it.
You are at a university now, Roosevelt University?
Yes.
And is it much easier this time around?
Well, I still have miles to go, but it's somewhat easier. But I still have 16 years of bad education. I still have to get out of my mind because they really did a job on me. But I don't regret the experience that I had because now I know the man that often have daggers in his smile.
You talk a little bit about this, that you were going through so many years of school, and you're kind of, it was a facade, wasn't it? You're kind of like a bluffing through that you could read, right? And I guess a lot of people do this.
Well, I really wasn't hiding behind a facade, but my problem started, the ideology of my problem was in grammar school. And when I started playing basketball in junior high school, I just got pushed on. and pushed on. And when I got to high school, I had a couple of courses with my coaches that was required. I knew I was having problems. I brought it to the attention of the principal at Wyandotte High School. But it was like the officials did at Creighton University. He did the same thing. Keep working hard, and you're going to be all right, son. And I knew I had a problem.
Do you say that do you feel that you're typical of a lot of other athletes and a lot of black athletes as well?
Well, I know a lot of athletes that can't read, do not have the skills that are hiding behind facades right to this day. But the Latin word for teacher is to lead and to draw out. And Miss Collins here, she was a caring teacher, her staff, and the students there, they was my greatest motivators, and I also urged them to motivate others the way they motivated me.
Let me ask the folks at home to jump into the conversation. We're talking tonight about education and about going back to basics. Robert Collins has a few thoughts on the creative education that we see around us today. She is the founder and guiding light of Westside Prep. Also along with us is Kevin Ross, who is now a student at Roosevelt University. His story was absolutely incredible. He was in his fourth year at college and barely could read or write and ended up with Marva Collins at Westside Prep. And as he says, she gave him a whole new lease on life. What was the time frame where teachers started passing young people that they knew in their hearts couldn't read and write? Can you put a time frame on it?
Exactly 30 years ago.
30 years ago.
When we decided, anybody really today who's 24, 25, 30, you ask them the last book that they've read, or to go into the basics, or maybe it's not important, but just to have an entire porphyry of reading to have a basics of the etymology of words, where our words came from, our Latin derivatives, or to know something about our Asclepius, our Aristophanes, or just to basically read. I think one would almost have to have a 12th grade or 10th or 12th grade education just to read Time, Newsweek. These things today are really stumbled on by people who allegedly have graduated from high school, from college. My teachers who come into the school, I just simply want to weep. Each year, I hire a new teacher that's just out of college. And they tell me that all the colleges tell them is how to control the children. Never how to teach children, how to teach real live children. But you see, Dennis, the people, there's a perpetuating hierarchy in education. The professors who write the textbooks and are who certify teachers, all you have to do is have courses in American education, paper pushing 101. Nobody worries about the things that matter the most, and that is, do you know your subject matter? Can you teach children?
At Westside Prep, how do you go about, the question I was going to ask you is how do you go about teaching the basics? But right as you sat down, right before the program went on the air, you said, what we need is a teacher, a blackboard, and some chalk, and that's about it, nothing fancy. Is that the way you go about it?
Well, surely, Dennis, I think in any field, just here in this studio, this program is as good as you are knowledgeable. You cannot depend on things, gimmicks. And in fact, the more the government actually paid for the mess that we're in now, which is why I've never taken any government funds, because we never would in America have had as many monies to fail as many children as we have without help from the federal government. But as more and more monies became available, we said, okay, Dennis, you're learning disabled. So we have to fill these rooms with learning disabilities, or we do not qualify for the federal funds. And of course, we had more and more monies to buy gimmicks, junk, things. Westside Preparatory School does not benefit from those kind of luxuries. We have to have monies just to pay the lights. To buy basic textbooks, we have no time for junk that cannot be used.
When you sit down with the parent and the youngster is going to be involved in your school and your teaching style, I know you make it absolutely a contract to get the parents involved. How much for a young person, and you can pick out the age, 10, 12, whatever you want to say, how old, how many hours do you want that youngster in the classroom? What kind of classes is he or she being taught? How much homework do you want from a young person?
That's one of the things they ask in the study A Nation at Risk, is to give more and more homework. Well, Judas Priest, you don't give more and more homework to children who can't read in the first place. I think children should have homework as a reinforcement. Rather than giving them 30 math problems, it's going to keep them up all night and keep mom and dad working with them. I think three or four problem with basic varieties of reinforcement. That is nuts and bolts homework. If you don't get quiet, I'm going to give you homework. That's ridiculous at most.
Mm-hmm.
You give homework as a reinforcement. You might need more work in multiplication. Kevin might need more work in something else, fractions, whatever. You give homework as a reinforcement. You do not give something that you have not taught. This is what I mean by prepackaged lesson plans. If we have read our Diogenes, or if we have done the Greek gods, the children will do further study on the Greek gods, and when they come in, they'll have to know who Terpsichore or Mnemosyne. They'll have to know the nine muses and why we call them the nine muses. Then going back to the etymology of we are museums, which means the study of mankind, and which came from the Greek muses. But we don't give them something that they have not had. We give them something they can be excited about. They mm-hmm. go home and share with their parents and not, Dad, will you show me how to do this? Mom, will you show me? I've had that with my own three children.
Kevin, you were in the class there at Westside Prep with kids who are half your age, right?
Yes.
How did that all work out? And as a human being, how did you handle that? Because a lot of people might say, gee, from a self-image point of view or from a confidence point of view, that must have been a pretty shattering experience.
Well, it was very painful to me, but I had to better myself as a person. I didn't want to go through life like the elite Socrates talk about, being blown from here and to there, believing whatever I was told. But the kids, that was my greatest motivator. Not one day did they ridicule me or make fun of me. And if I needed some help, the kids was there to help me. And some of those students, believe it or not, they was more intelligent than some of the students that I attend college with. And I was very surprised at the greatness and the power in these kids' thoughts. I was really surprised.
How did you end up at Westside? Was it an option that the school suggested to you?
Well, after they couldn't run me off in my senior year.
Did they try to unload you?
Yes, they tried to unload me because I had an injury.
Yeah.
And it's very sad that they tried to run me off, but they gave me three options. One was to be a police officer, which I couldn't fill out a reasonable police report. And the second one was to be a welder. And the third one was to go to Westside Prep, which they tried to discourage me from going there. So, Kevin, how would you feel going to school with them little kids? Would you be embarrassed? Chicago's a tough city. I don't think you should go there. But the only reason they brought them three proposals to me, it was because a J-backer there said, hey, a J-backer is a man who put money into the program. Mm-hmm. And he said, if they don't do nothing for you, son, you come and tell me. Because a lot of people knew I was getting a broad deal there.
Mm-hmm. A lot of young people, kind of because of the press, look up to you nowadays. Does that feel comfortable to you?
Well, I'm just happy that I can help humanity. Because I'm just happy I can be a part of the great American dream. Because we have, like Ms. Collins said, we have a problem in our nation. And I'm just happy that I can help people and encourage them to better themselves so our country can be number one again.
Okay. Barbara?
And Dennis, you know, I think maybe something Kevin didn't say in modesty is many times he'll go down to the lake in Chicago and he'll find children ditching school. And he will say to them, I will come to school and speak in your honor if you promise me you will not play hooky again. And these children are now writing letters to him. Mm-hmm. But I think he's come something like a Pied Piper who sees children playing hooky from school and on the streets. And he gets them back into school, and then he goes and he does an assembly. He clears it with the child's principal. But that child begins to feel really big in that school. I have Kevin Ross coming to speak in my honor. And I think Kevin is a living witness to inner city children that you cannot conquer the world in a pair of gym shoes.
We're talking tonight with Marva Collins. She is the founder and guiding light of Westside Prep. That's in Chicago. Also along with us is one of her former students, Kevin Ross, who is now at Roosevelt University. Your phone call is coming up next on Late Night America. Late Night America.
My name is Daniel, and I would just like to ask Mrs. Collins her opinion on some school systems. A child is retained only maybe 1 year, especially in the middle school level. And I know in some situations, the size of the student is not, maybe not an official, but it is a criteria as to whether a child is retained or not.
Are you talking about physical size, huh?
Yes.
Okay.
I can only tell you what I feel. I never want to get to be an expert. That's what got us into all the mess we're in now, is the experts. But I can tell you what I believe. I believe that any child that's retained in a grade develops an inferiority feeling the rest of his life, whether it's a job or whatever, that I failed in school and somehow I'm not going to succeed. That has been an off-the-record study I have done of children. We have a student there this summer who came in all the way from Jacksonville, Florida, who's boarding there, and he's failed seventh grade three times. I can see this child has a very defeatist attitude when I put my hand around his shoulder and say, you can. I think the good teacher makes certain that they do not give the child the overburden of failing in the first place from day one of school, not at the end of the year to say that you must repeat this grade. I think we have to do whatever we can to give that child, realize that we're dealing with a child for a lifetime, not just that school year.
But now, but isn't part of our conversation the fact that kids are passed and they don't know the work? How do you handle
that? The good teacher makes certain that wherever, Kevin came to me at a second grade level, I had to pull him up to a college freshman level in just 10 months time with no excuses in between. The good teacher works with the student on weekends, after hours. Our teachers are there from 8 in the mornings and are 7 in the mornings till sometimes 10 and 11 at night, preparing for students, figuring out new ways, all of us are joining ways. I still feel that the good teacher makes the poor student good and the good student superior, and we refuse to let our students fail.
So you're saying that almost all children, unless there's a severe problem with a handicap of intelligence, should be able to go through the grades?
I think any child who is given the right support system from the very beginning, picking up those things that they have not had and not lamenting and writing on their records, child needs this, child needs that. I think we get more things written in America than we get right.
Hi there, you're on Late Night America?
Yes, I'm calling from New York. I have a problem with my 13-year-old daughter.
What's your name?
Kirk.
Hi, Kirk.
The problem is that she's an average student in school, but when she comes home, she has absolutely no idea of what she's learned. It all has no meaning to her. She's a poor reader. She's behind a couple of years in reading. She has no interest. She's not interested in anything. And she doesn't seem to have any motivation at all to learn. We're just about to enroll her in parochial school from private school because we were very unhappy with the private school, with, you know, public schools. And I wanted to know Ms. Collins' opinion as to what we can do without relying on the schools.
First of all, Kurt, remove the overburden from your child of telling her that she's unmotivated, that she's not doing well. It's through no fault of hers. It's the quackery and the malpractice that's used in our schools today. Pick up books such as our 23 Fairy Tales by Leo Tolstoy, Tales from Shakespeare by Bernard Miles. The child is bored in school because of our watered-down curriculums today, our easy-to-teach, easy-to-read junk that we have in our schools. The second reason your child, and I hear from parents all across the country almost every day, with the same story as yours, our children are learning a reading system in this country that was designed to teach deaf mutes. It was used by Gallaudet for deaf mutes. And with the when Horace Mann started the first teacher training institution in Massachusetts, they tried it with normal children. And one of the mysteries of the Western world to me is why we're still using a look-say method that was designed to teach deaf mutes to read.
That's the way we, you mean reading a printed page?
Because a deaf mute,
and then you say it out loud?
A deaf mute dentist has no sound sense.
Mm-hmm.
So they look at the words and continually mimic them. We've used that with normal children. For example, when a child, every American classroom, and I travel about 14 times per month, there are teachers there telling children that A is symbolic of apple. But what happens when E-I-G-H also says A, as in neighbor, I before E except after C, unless E has the sound of A as in neighbor and wait. What about E-I-E-A-Y, which also says A as in they? A-I-G-H-A, which says A. E-A, which also says A as in stake and break. And I think what we have to do is begin to teach these children words synonymously, all of the sounds for A, the same for CH. We tell them that C is symbolic of cat, but what about CH is in bronchitis. What about the CH which says chair as in chat? What about the CH which says SH as in Charlie, Andromache, Charlemagne? Children are missing all of those spellings because we're given this dumb look-say method across America.
Hi there, you're on Late Night America. Hello?
Hello, Dennis. Hello?
Yes.
Dennis?
Yep.
My name is Sally, and I'm calling from Beaumont, Texas.
Go ahead, Sally.
I am a teacher here, and I teach the special education child. And I am interested, does Mrs. Collins have a school where we can go as teachers to learn from her? Or can we get material? I would personally like a reading list. I teach middle school.
All right.
We have teacher training sessions that draw teachers from as far away as Bermuda and Hawaii every 3 months. Maybe Dennis can give you an address, or you can be in touch with me at school. I will let you know about the teacher training sessions because this is something I do every 3 months with teachers.
If you are a teacher and you're interested in getting in touch with Marva, you just drop her a line, care of us here at the show, and we'll give you that address at the end of the spot, and then we'll pass that along to her. Hi there, you're on Late Night America.
Yeah, this is Mike from Kansas City, Kansas.
Go ahead, Mike.
Miss Collins, I just a few, one just pretty broad question, but I think it's an important one. I take it that your institution is a private one, is that correct?
Very, very private. So private that we only get our funds from what Marva Collins speaks for across the country and from tuition.
All right. Do you have a follow-up question on that?
Yes. What I wanted to know was, what can, do you think that with all these reports that came out, what can public education do that could maybe turn it around into obviously better than what we have now?
I think we have to disregard all the baleful reports. We don't have time for any more studies. That's what we've done, more and more studies and less work. I think there are good teachers all across this country. I think we have to get back to using common sense. And that's what we have failed to use in the school. We have to throw out some of the junk and begin to teach children to really read, write, think, and compute. And if you're a teacher, ignore the expert's advice that tells you children should read silently. That, to me, is so ridiculous because capacity becomes capacity, diary becomes dairy, an angle becomes an angel. And no wonder children are not comprehending on the standardized test because they have not understood what they've read in the first place. There must be more oral reading, more dialogue between teacher and pupil, and less machines, gimmicks, and things. Take all the things out of your classroom, the gimmicks, and put them back in the closets and the schoolrooms, and begin to use more of a blackboard and teacher-pupil dialogue. And I guarantee you, my last hat, you will see your children's test score spiral.
Hi there, you're on Late Night America?
Yes, this is Matt from Houston. I'd like to direct this question to Marva.
Mm-hmm.
My son is in a magnet program down here. It's called the Vanguard program, and it's supposed to be for gifted children.
Mm-hmm.
He scored in the upper 90% on the Iowa test score. And listening to a conversation, I understood her to say that
the following
we couldn't lead credence to a basic education, you know, so far as people 30 years back. I'd like to know how much credibility can we give the Iowa test score. He loves to read. However, his last 9 weeks in school, he's nine going into fifth grade, he got a C in reading. And we can't take a book out of his hand, even on Sundays when he's going to the car.
Yeah.
I think part of his motivation, but my question is directed towards how much credence can we give the Iowa test score?
Well, I think all tests have certain credence there because, first of all, they teach children what they should know, and that's punctuation, reading comprehension, word attack skills, vocabulary. That's something children should learn in every school. Now, many times, teachers are intimidated by very bright students. And sometimes our C might be an indication that this child has asked too many questions. The child might be just a bit too bright to make it comfortable for the teacher to teach the slower achievers in the classroom. And again, many, many teachers are intimidated by bright children, and this might be one of the problems with your child.
Kevin, I was just thinking of what do you think might have happened if you didn't get injured and your life kept going along the way it was going?
Well, I went to a camp in the summer of the end of my senior year, and I did have an offer of $125,000 that I turned down to go overseas to play basketball because
uh-huh.
I felt the education was the best foundation in that. Opportunity, I could not pass it up.
So you probably would have graduated and played ball, right?
Well, yeah, no. Yeah, if I, no, I don't really know because my education skills was really bad and I wanted to get help at Creighton University in my sophomore year. I asked the athletic director and the coach, could I redshirt 1 year?
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want me to redshirt and they just kept pushing me through. And because our education was number one, my number one priority, and basketball was second.
Okay, now, do you know of people who didn't get injured, were graduated, tried to make it in the pros, didn't make it in the pros, whatever sport, basketball, football, could be anything?
I see them all the time on the corners, in prison. I know a lot of athletes that got into trouble because they didn't have nowhere else, nothing else to do because their education wasn't there.
Okay. Right.
There is a story of one guy who's working as a janitor. I don't remember which school, who graduated after 4 years and is doing janitorial work. And Dennis, speaking across the country, I meet a lot of athletes who really cannot answer coherently a question that an interviewer will ask them, who are very uncomfortable with long contracts. And they dare not ask you, Dennis, what does that mean? So they sign the contract not understanding at all what 10% means, what 15% means per diem or per annum. And I still say that these are people, and I won't call their names, but people would be surprised if they actually knew the professional athletes that our children look up to that cannot coherently read properly.
Well, I just think that a lot of the colleges and universities exploit the kids. They get them to bring in an awful lot of money to alumni associations. They fill an awful lot of stadiums. But boy, if that youngster is not performing, they unload him. They try to cut him loose, and they don't care what happens to him at all.
Well, basically, too, Dennis, the pressure that it puts on that child is a lifetime, always being... When the last bell it no longer sounds, when the last cheer has died down, I still have to feel good about me. And this is what we get our children at Westside Prep to realize.
That's what it is. It has to do with image, right? Good,
yes.
Positive self-image.
I mean, how are you going to feel when you're hurt?
Mm-hmm. Hi there, you're on Late Night America?
Yes, my name is Wayman King, and I'm calling from Kansas City, Missouri.
Good to have you with us.
Excuse me?
Good to have you with us.
I'd like to talk to... Kevin, please, a comment I'd like to make.
Okay, go ahead.
I played against him in the Summer League, the Bell Summer League in Kansas City, Kansas, and I remember him from there. And I just wanted to say that I admire the things that he's going through now and the things that he went through to get to obtain his education and his degree, because I, too, participated in athletics at the University of Iowa. I walked onto the team and played ball there and earned a scholarship. I'm currently working on my master's degree. And when I meet younger guys and they come into the school, I always talk to them and try and explain to them how important education is. And even though you did get pushed through the system as far as athletics are concerned, I really admire the way you went back and went after your education.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have an address up on the screen if you want to get in touch with Marva, M-A-R-V-A, Collins. Marva Collins, Late Night America, 7441 2nd Boulevard, Detroit, 48202. You have the last word.
My last plea to Americans, again, is we cannot afford to continue to lose so many gifted, so many bright children in America. If we look at our teenage suicide, teenage alcoholism, teenage depression, our crime, our children are all saying to us, enough is too much. My plea to every educator that's watching tonight is please once again, begin to relight the candles of excellence in America through your classrooms. To every parent that's watching tonight, I'd like to say, please stop telling your children the negative, derisive things about themselves and let them know that they have great potentials. They do not have to plug in looking like Martians to plug out the bad noises that we've given them. This is the greatest problem we have at Westside Preparatory School, is building self-esteem once it has been destroyed. The teaching becomes an easy chore.
Okay. We thank you, Marva, for being
with
us.
It's been a real pleasure.
Kevin, thank you very much. Good luck to you.